Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an Hour of Mind Power. Today we're going to be talking with a Mr. William Powers, and he is in a vehicle. He's on his way. He's going to be at the phone in just a few minutes. He just got through calling into the studio. So we're going to be talking with him about his experience of living in a space of 12 by 12. Now just try to put that in your head. That you'd live in that small an area, and maybe you are, I don't know, but I lived in something of that size when I was about 17 years old. And it's amazing how you cope, but that means that your kitchen and everything else, excepting the outhouse, is right there. So we're going to be talking with William in just a little bit, so don't go away. But in the interim, I thought I would just share with you a little bit of information that I have. I'm going to be telling you about phantom bullets later on in the show if we have the time. Also, have your pad of paper and pen handy because I've got some really good recipes. I've got a recipe for a German pancake. And, oh, if you're like me, you think, gee, I can't eat things like that because they're so fattening, Donna. I just don't want to do that. Well, this is a recipe that isn't going to be fattening. That's right. It's a recipe that was given to me a number of years ago. I've served it to guests, so I'm going to be sharing that with you as well. Well, before William gets to his phone, and again, he's on his way right now, I just thought I'd share a few odds and ends of thoughts, and one is about water. So many people, you see them walking around with their bottles of water. It's really a big thing today. But there's more value to water than what you can imagine. And one of the biggest things has to do with the fact of dehydration. And we don't think about that. If you're sitting in front of a computer, you don't think about, gee whiz, I'm in front of equipment that is literally leaching moisture out of me. I know I can tell the difference in my skin. It really may sound a little wacky, but it's true. So you need to pay attention to the fact that if you start getting a little cranky, you may need to have water. There was a Tufts University study of college athletes who were not given fluids during practice. And what occurred was this. They felt more confused. They got frustrated, angry, tense, and they sort of got depressed. It was a very interesting phenomenon for them to observe. Now, those people that were given water, ample amounts of water, it made all the difference in the world. They didn't have any of these things affect them. So the level of dehydration, even though it was mild, they said it could easily be compared to what busy office workers might experience if they forget to drink enough during the day. Just a tip. Now we have Mr. Powers with us. Hello, and welcome to the show. Hello, William? I can hear somebody moving around. William?
Hello, how are you?
Hi. Well, I could hear you, but I couldn't hear you. So I'm glad you're on the line with us.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here today, Donna.
Well, it's a delight having you. Now, I want my audience to know a little bit about you. You've led development aid and conservation initiatives in Latin America, Africa, and Washington, D.C. You've written books about those experiences. You are a speaker and senior fellow at the World Policy Institute, and you live part-time in New York City. Your story, the book, 12 by 12, was interesting reading because there is a woman that plays a very significant role relative to you being in this experience of living in this tiny amount of space, and her name is Dr. Jackie Benson. Tell us a little bit about Jackie.
Well, you know, the first time I met her, I was just really inspired. You know, she was covered with honeybees from her hive there and just kind of petting them with her finger. And she's about a 60-year-old physician, and she lives in a 12-foot by 12-foot house off the grid, no electricity or running water, in North Carolina. And she's interesting because she could make $250,000 a year as a senior physician, but she only accepts $11,000 and gives the rest back. She believes that, you know, even in the heart of the world's richest country, you can live a lot better with less.
Fascinating. Now, how did the two of you connect?
Well, it was funny because it was actually over the dinner table. I was down visiting my parents in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. I'd just gotten back from several years in Latin America working on big rainforest projects, and I'd landed in New York City, and my dad was undergoing an operation. So I went down from New York to North Carolina, and my mom mentioned it over the dinner table, that there was this woman who lived in a 12-foot by 12-foot house, and I was immediately intrigued.
No kidding.
So I went out to meet with her. It was very hard to get in touch at first, but went out to meet with her, and we had this conversation that just spiraled and went to amazing depths for like 3 or 4 hours, you know, in her permaculture fields by No Name Creek in the 12 by 12. And it just really struck a chord with me. So, you know, then it was about a week later that I received a handwritten note from her. Some people may remember the days when there were handwritten notes. And she invited me to stay, to tiny house sit, if you will, for a season in her 12 by 12 while she was traveling. So, of course, I canceled my flight back to New York and headed for No Name Creek instead.
Oh, my goodness. Now, there's a quote at the beginning of your book by Franz Kafka. You need not leave your room. Remain sitting at your table and listen. You need not even listen. Simply wait. You need not even wait. Just learn to become quiet and still and solitary. The world will freely offer itself to you unmasked. It has no choice. It will roll in ecstasy at your feet.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Jackie is a woman who is incredibly unique because she is so talented, and yet she opted for this lifestyle, and then she extends this invitation to you. Now, your mother really has a great deal of regard for her, but there's also a term you used about this woman. It's called a wisdom keeper. What is a wisdom keeper?
Well, it's a Native American idea of the mostly women who maintain the traditions of the tribe and who maintain a connection to Mother Earth. It's sort of like an earth knowledge. So people in the area were referring to her as a wisdom keeper, a kind of modern-day
mm-hmm.
wisdom keeper.
Mm-hmm. Now, with this opportunity, when you had to be there, did you have any second thoughts when you walked up to this 12 by 12 place? You said she had a permaculture farm. What is a permaculture farm?
She describes permaculture as the things your grandparents knew, but your parents forgot. Another way of describing it is that it's a conjunction of the words permanent agriculture and permanent culture. So it's a way of sustainably designing landscape, architecture, and agriculture. And she set up her permaculture farm in zones, which is the usual way. You know, so there's zone one, which is like your kitchen gardens and the food that you get really need access to right away.
Mm-hmm.
Zone two is sort of outside of the deer fence, so you have some berries and fruit trees and so on. Zone three is sort of like the wood and other non-timber forest products. And then zone four is just for Mother Nature. So it's a contemporary comprehensive design that she uses. And you asked about like whether I had doubts when I first got there. I sure did.
Oh, yes.
You know, I mean, can you imagine, just try to picture yourself driving out from Duke University and University of Chapel Hill, like this really big research triangle, Raleigh, Durham,
mm-hmm.
Chapel Hill, and the roads get continually more rutted, and then you've left the McMansions behind and all of the big pharmaceutical companies, and suddenly ear in front of this lighthouse that looks so small that it's like you're looking down the thin edge of a razor blade. That's how small it is. And I was shocked because I couldn't believe that someone actually lives in there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the middle of America, that someone's living a sustainable lifestyle, a subsistence lifestyle, you might say.
Amazing. Now, you had an Alice in Wonderland experience, though, when you stepped inside the house, didn't you?
Yes, it was strange because when I stepped inside, I expected to feel cramped and it to be just awkward talking with her in this tiny space. But actually, it was quite roomy. You know, when I walked in there, I realized, oh, she's got this loft upstairs where the bed is. You know, you go up this little ladder to a loft. Her great-grandmother's rocking chair with the goose head was right there. I sat down in it. She sat in another chair. We had tea. There's bookshelves. It's a nice cedar wall on one side, a lot of light coming in. So it's quite a spacious little house.
Well, I have seen little places like that. In fact, I even lived in one like that before
right?
We were able to reach you. And that was many years ago. And it's amazing how you can utilize that small space. But you'll have to, did she use a propane stove for cooking?
That's right. She did use a propane stove for cooking. However, all the water was harvested off the roof into two catchment barrels on the side. There was a sun shower for taking a nice warm shower in the afternoons. It was heated up by the sun during the day. And there was no electricity at all, so it was all sort of like fires outside, you know, and candles inside.
Amazing. I don't think that would work very well in Alaska, especially with the outhouse. Don't think that would be bad, although I know pioneers lived that way and they only had tents. But the Carolinas are so gorgeous, and in that environment, though, you can have all kinds of bugs and different things that invade your space, yet she really was very comfortable there.
It's quite comfortable. I think there's a misconception about the, you know, tens of thousands of people who live off-grid in North America that it's somehow really roughing it, like as if you're camping. It's not that way at all. As I was to discover living there for a season and also visiting many other wild crafters in the area, you know, you've got your space, you know, your nice comfortable bed, your sun shower, and all these gardens full of fresh food, your neighbors that are also raising animals that you're able to trade, you know, barter for meat and other things. And, you know, it's just like it becomes the new normal for you, and it doesn't feel like roughing it at all. In fact, there's an abundance of shiitake mushrooms growing on logs and, you know, home-crafted wine and jams and all this honey from the beehive and everything like that. So it's actually quite sensuous and quite lovely. And, you know, she says that she wakes up with tears of joy some mornings, just so happy to be without the standby lights on the appliances and the humming refrigerator and all of that, just to be purely connected with nature once again.
She's a fascinating woman, and your book, 12 by 12, elicits all kinds of thoughts when one reads it, because you have different modalities of awareness that you yourself experienced. But she asked you a question that I thought was really interesting. Where do you grab the dragon's tail? Or you asked her. You ask her that question. Where do you grab the dragon's tail?
Right. So she asked me first, and then I went ahead and asked her because I wasn't quite sure. And she said, you grab the dragon's tail where the suffering grabs you the most.
Mm-hmm.
That was her response. So, I mean, people can make what they want out of that, but in some ways it's a little bit sort of oxymoronic, but the idea is that wherever you feel the greatest passion or the greatest pain, in some ways, about what's going on in the world, maybe that's where you can do your part. You know, the dragon represents kind of like the darkness that there is in the world, whether it's rainforest destruction or big oil spills in the Gulf or genocide in Rwanda or whatever it is, drug problems in your own neighborhood. Whatever it is that touches you and resonates a chord, you can grab the dragon's tail there. And if everyone does that, that's millions of people doing it.
Correct, and it all makes a difference. Now, I had to chuckle when you said when Jackie left you because she was going on a sabbatical, because she was going to try to determine whether she's going to stay within the medical field or not, and you were going to be the custodian of this 12 by 12 space, You said she didn't leave An Idiot's Guide to Living in a 12 by 12, which I had to chuckle at because I thought, An Idiot's Guide? What do you think is good? That's not very much space.
Mm-hmm.
But it really was going to be a challenge for you. And one of the first things that you said that was really an eye-opener for you was the appreciation of water. Why?
Right. Well, just the sense that water does not come from the tap. You know,
mm-hmm.
It comes from the earth and the sky. And that's what I reconnected with out there, was the fact that all of the water that I used for the entire time was coming into these barrels off the roof of this tiny house. And it was an abundance of water. There was plenty of it, both for irrigating the gardens, for showering, for cooking and everything. There was also a spring nearby, a hidden spring, where you could go with bottles of water and fill those to have even purer water to drink. But all the water came from the earth, and I reconnected to that.
I was really, and my listeners may think I'm a little wacky, but the stories of the outhouses, I think anybody that was in Girl Scouts or anything else, we all have horrific tales of spiders or snakes or, you know, cobwebs covering the toilet or whatever that you can have with outhouses. But she didn't have a standard outhouse. What did she use?
Well, she uses this sort of 5-gallon bucket composting toilet. If you want to read the Bible of composting toilets, there's the Humanure Handbook. It's a conjunction of human and manure.
Mm-hmm.
All kinds of designs. Of course, she chose the simplest one, true to her simplicity ethic. And, you know, it's actually doesn't smell at all. You use cedar chips after each use, and then it just gets composted afterwards. You know, I personally, science notwithstanding, couldn't really compost it with the vegetables, so I did bury it back in the woods, actually.
Mm-hmm. That's something that a lot of people do not realize, is the amount of waste that humans contribute every day to the environment. And with the sewage treatment systems that we have today in many areas, that helps handle that when we have mass populations. And when you think of just this one singular little tiny piece of environment that Jackie's space encompasses, it doesn't seem like much. But if you stop and think of tribal groups like the Indians that had to be nomadic, that is a part of the reality of nomadic animals and people, because
mm-hmm.
after a while they would have a tremendous amount of waste.
Of course, that's right.
It's just absolutely amazing. Now, you met some wonderful, wonderful people. You had some interesting neighbors. And when you met this young man, Kyle, I love the stories you had in here, because this kid is so down to earth. And I had to laugh at you, because you're really a city boy. You never have been a country boy. Ever. And for
right.
this kid, he said, you know, you've got a white broiler over here, and here I'm going to give you one. He gives you one, and you said, wait a minute, it's still alive.
Right, it's still alive. And I asked him, well, it has to be slaughtered. And he said, very innocently, no, you're going to slaughter it.
Mm-hmm.
So suddenly it was up to me. The onus was on me to, if I was going to eat meat, I'd have to kill it myself.
Yes. Now, he was so candid when he was speaking to you. Of course, he was really having a good time with the city boy. And he said, there's two ways to kill a chicken. And you said, gee, I thought you had to cut the throat. And you said, that's the other way, but it's harder. I'd recommend blowing its brains out. Now, just imagine a young kid talking to a mature city adult, okay, that's never done anything like that. And it's really an eye-opener, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Absolutely. And I learned
what
so
happened
much.
To that chicken?
Well, you know, I actually was not able to go ahead and kill it. I just, you know, I couldn't really go through with it. But they slaughtered it, and
mm-hmm.
I did eat chickens just from their farm the whole time I was out there, and their eggs and so on. So, you know, there was a big contrast between the gold-kissed factory farms in the area, you know, these big sort of industrial chicken factories,
mm-hmm.
and often the smell, this terrible stench would come over, waft over the 12 by 12 from these chicken factories,
mm-hmm.
compared to the free-range chickens that these neighbors, the Thompsons, were raising. You know, there couldn't be a greater contrast of the two ways that we can choose to consume food, you know, through this dehumanizing and you know, the total lack of respect for the animals in the big factories versus these sort of Jeffersonian freeholders, these folks that are, in fact, this family, the Thompsons, they left a trailer park because their kids were as exposed to guns and drugs and other problems to become organic farmers and to live on the land. They made a conscious choice trying to do that because they also believed that, you know, independence and having your own plot of land is sort of the bedrock of a true democracy.
Well, I think a lot of people feel that way. And it was interesting, in your book, you said this county, which is called Adams County, is adding small farms every year. Now, farming is hard work. There are no shortcuts. You have to contend with weather. You've got all kinds of scenarios that you can go through. It's a very hard life. And it is when you've got a family that can assist you, maybe that's helpful. But you're not able to do things really on a major level because you just don't have enough hands. You just don't have enough time to be able to take care of it. A farm is overall, between the animals and considering crops, really in cases a lot of work.
Mm-hmm. It is, but because of the existence of farmers markets these days, it's gone up from, I think, 1,500 to something like 5,000 now over just 10 years, this huge explosion of farmers markets. It's allowed sort of small family farms who grow organically to be able to actually make a living at it because of the premium prices that can be charged at the farmers market and because you're eliminating the middleman. They can go directly to the consumers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what sort of helps families like the Thompsons actually survive and thrive.
I agree with that.
A new niche, and like people, you know, I'm sure out there your listeners consider that when they buy their food, the fact that going to a farmer's market is really a vote for this other kind of world without the kind of factory farming we see in a movie like Food, Inc., or we hear about Michael Pollan's work and others, you know.
Well, I think that this experience that you had living in this 12 by 12, you found that she had materials there that you could read. And tell us about Bradley. This was a significant part of your book. Who was he and what did he do?
Right. So Bradley is an eco-developer, you might say. He actually teaches at a community college nearby, and he started the permaculture program there, which is the one that inspired a lot of people in the area to go off-grid and to do 12 by 12 houses and so on. But, you know, he realized that the only way to stop sprawl, and he was concerned about the fact that our American landscapes were continually being eroded by sort of five-acre plots and by development. The only way to stop that kind of a sprawl was to actually buy up the land, you know? And so he started to do that, and he bought up large plots of land in these counties that were about to get hit by sprawl, the ones near the Research Triangle area. And he turned them into little communities like Jackie's. You know, she wasn't alone there. She wasn't living in a cave and eating roots and berries like a hermit. No. She was part of a community. In fact, you know, not just the Thompsons, who we just talked about with their chickens, but also an African-American neighbor, some Latin Americans as well. And each of these sort of four or five families had about an acre and a half or 2 acres. And then the rest of this large 30-acre plot was just in conservation. And so Bradley is not only doing it in this area, but also in many others around the state, including adjacent to towns, like where he's revitalizing sort of the downtown of these towns that are about to go under, that are just like boarded up because of Walmart and all the sort of box stores on the outsides. He'll reinvigorate that through cafes and art galleries and so on, and then have people living in those spaces as well to be able to walk to the businesses. And so it's not only a rural development strategy, but also urban.
There are many communities throughout the United States that are finding that they can revitalize their economies by finding a new niche. And that is exactly what's happening there in Adams County. And I really respect and appreciate the entrepreneurial positioning that Bradley has developed, because it's a good example for others, and it's not the only thing that can be done, but he's saying, take a look. This can be very helpful. You talk also about wild crafters. Who are they, and where are they?
Well, it's a term that I sort of came up with in 12 by 12, but the idea is that these are people, wild crafters, who are developing their hobbies, their careers, their personal lives as much as they can in the modern world in harmony with Mother Nature. In other words, they're trying to do furniture making and, you know, biodiesel brewing and permaculture and organic farming and everything else in a way that's sort of joyful and that respects the biosphere's limits. You know, unfortunately, we're out of sync with the biosphere right now, as we all know. You may not know that it would take 5 additional planets if everyone consumed at the level of the average American. If everyone in the world consumed at that level, like the Chinese and the Indians and the Brazilians. Luckily, they don't yet, although they are aspiring towards it. You know.
Mm-hmm.
These are Americans, right, in our own country who are saying, wait a minute, can I get my number of planets down to, say, 2 or even 1? You know, and you can actually go online and measure your carbon footprint. There's a website where you can, and I have it linked to on my website, but you can just plug in how many times you drive a week and fly and what kind of house you live in and so on. And at the end, it spits out how many planets it would take if everyone lived at that level.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite fascinating to see that. So the Wildcrafters are exactly doing that. They're trying to get their number of planets down.
Well, I think it's a wonderful challenge because we can have better energy opportunities. We can do things in our environments that are going to benefit the natural environment. And I think mankind has gone through this kind of a cycle on different levels throughout history. And you either wake up or you disappear because what comes out of the earth is what nourishes us on so many different levels. And it's a harmonic that's constantly having to be paid attention to. And I think that we've had to grow up and become aware, and we're seeing so many things that we didn't think made a difference because nobody thought through very thoughtfully. And now you look at yourself and so many other people and saying, wait a minute, we can do something differently. So it's an interesting period to be in. I just think there's going to be so many changes that are going to come in, and it's going to be going up against a lot of established attitudes, patterns, expectations, but it's happening.
It's a fascinating time to be alive and exciting. You know, it's like this conjunction of crisis and opportunity, you know, and
mm-hmm.
I think that a lot of the people who I highlight in the book are at that nexus of crisis and opportunity, and they're looking for creative ways, like I call it the creative edge, you know, to live joyfully and happily and, quite frankly, hedonistically in a certain sense, because they're finding a lot of joy and pleasure in this, but also in a way that's responsible, and that goes back to, like, the roots of American values and ethics,
mm-hmm.
respect for the landscape, independence and freedom, these types of ideals, stepping a little bit out of the kind of corporate-controlled world and back into, you know, more of a natural world. And also, they're not going backwards by any means. This is 21st century homesteading, so
mm-hmm.
It's something very new, and it's something to aspire towards, not looking into the past, because, you know, Jackie is just one model, the 12x12 model, but there are others who are using technologies selectively. You know, they're using
mm-hmm.
internet technologies and solar panels and alternative energy and other ways of communicating and linking that are very much tied into globalization, but you might call it like a benign globalization. It's what I call the soft world, you know, as opposed
mm-hmm.
to Thomas Friedman's flat world.
Yes, and it's fascinating because we have all of these different levels of thinking and application, and depending on where you were, you know, living in Carolina, in those states, they're green, there's plenty of water. You go to the middle of Nevada, that's not, or Death Valley, you're not going to be able to live the same way.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this
exactly.
adaptability and the thoughtfulness about where you are, what's necessary. And again, I just think it's part of this cycle where there's like a wake-up. And
mm-hmm.
it's, okay, what do we do here? So it's a great opportunity, a great time for the entrepreneurs that want to think outside of the box. It's a
mm-hmm.
great time for people that want to learn different ways, better ways of growing food for billions of people on this planet. It's a great time to be innovative and to say, let's see what we can do. There's a lot of good points in your book about the 12x12, and you cover so many different subjects, and I know we're just about out of time, but William, I wanted to ask you a question. Mm-hmm. You have had the experience of traveling throughout the world. You've been in places where people live in extreme poverty, and you know, there's just all kinds of things that you look at. But something that I've observed with many people that we might think as poor, they're not necessarily poor at all. It's our perceptions from where we are. What have been some of the most profound levels of awareness that you've developed about this wonderful world that we live in with all the culture and diversity?
Well, you know, I would say that we need to embrace a leisure ethic instead of purely a work ethic. And I've seen this working in about 60 countries around the world, especially Africa and South America, you know, that there's an emphasis not just on having and doing, but also on being. And people who believe that people are only people through other people, through community, focusing on that, focusing on connection with nature. And just having that meditative space, like a lot of people in these other cultures leave a lot of free time just to sit, listen to the sounds of the forest, the creek, everything else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just that pure beingness, I think, answers a lot of our questions and solves a lot of our personal problems. So, you know, I would say that's one of the huge lessons that I've learned in 10 or 15 years of working abroad, you know, is that you have to draw a big and blatant distinction between poverty, and I've seen that, believe me, like living in Civil War Liberia and Sierra
mm-hmm.
Leone, and then subsistence living, because most of what we're attacking through development programs is not a problem. It's a subsistence living.
Mm-hmm.
It's living in harmony with nature. And so I think that, you know, let's draw that distinction. Let's try to solve the really immiserating poverty, of course. But let's also respect people's right to live sustainably.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I agree. Well, I think your comments are wonderful. What's your website people can go to?
Oh, well, actually, my website is William Powers, my name, williampowersbooks.com. And on there, we just put up a new video, a new trailer, a two-minute trailer that shows the 12x12 house and a beautiful painting of the gardens and her house, how it's laid out. So you can just take a look at that as well.
Wow, great. Okay, yeah. So that's William Power Books. That's plural.
Yeah, it's actually William Powers Books with an S.
Oh, okay. WilliamPowersBooks.com. Okay,
we got it right. Just Google, and you just in Google just type William Powers 12x12,
mm-hmm.
and it'll come up.
Terrific. Well, it's been a delight, William. Your book is fascinating reading because you go into a lot of history and different things. But I think you also bring out some interesting points about how a woman has influenced your life so strongly and gave you a whole new experience that really enabled you to put together quite an interesting book.
Well, I appreciate that. And I also appreciate your very positive perspectives on things and the fact that we really can make a change. And that's great to bring out.
Thank you, William. Again, it's been a delight having you as a guest. 12 by 12, a one-room cabin off the grid and beyond, the American dream. Very good reading and very insightful perceptions that I know you would enjoy. This is Donna Sebo. We are going to be taking a break, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hello and welcome. Welcome back. This is Donna Sebo. Telephone lines are now open if you'd like to give me a chat or give me a call, excuse me, so we can chat. Call in to 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. I have to share this with you. There was a Polish student that called the police on his mother saying she was guilty of psychological torture. Horrific. They come right out. They talk to the young man. Get the facts. What are they? The reason that she needed to be arrested. Her offense, according to Ananova, is that she asked him to take a bath and clean up his room. Yo-ho! Yes. Those of us that have gone through those scenarios. Can you imagine the audacity? They should have taken him to the police station and assigned him the cleaning job of keeping everything in order at the police station. Forget the stuff about his mother. I mean, that is unbelievable. Ah, yes, we have those things occurring around the world, not just here. Every parent has, I think, just about gone through that on their own level. Okay, I promised you that I had a wonderful recipe, and I'm going to be giving that to you in just a minute, for a German pancake. This came from a friend of mine many years ago, and it's just so easy to fix, and it is wonderful. If you're really trying to get yourself in shape for summer because you want to look the best you can, but every once in a while you want something that's got flavor to it. You want a pancake, but you don't want all of those heavy, heavy calories. This is a good one, so I'll give it to you in just a minute. But I wanted to let you know about our guest that's going to be on tomorrow. That's Mary Barton. We're going to be talking about psychic development. Delightful lady. She has been involved in the work of mine for a few years, and so she put together some interesting material that she likes to think will help to educate and to inform you on how you can develop your own intuitive skills. So that'll be tomorrow. Okay, I have the recipe for you. So get out that pad of paper. Actually, I had a couple of recipes I wanted to share with you today, but this is the one that I just love. The first time I ever had a German pancake was in a restaurant in California, and they brought out what I considered an absolute work of art. Of course, it had about 10 gazillion calories in it, but oh, was it good. And I always ended up taking a very nice size baggie home to reheat it, but it was never the same. Well, I've always avoided those kinds of dishes because I always felt, it's the old adage, 30 seconds on the lips, 45 years on the hips, right? So this one, when I found out about it, I was astonished. It's absolutely easy, 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 easy. Now, you have to cook it at a very high heat, and you want to make sure that you have an all-metal slope-sided skillet or an omelet pan, which usually has slope sides with a metal handle. You don't want to have anything with wood or plastic because it has to go into that hot oven. And many times when you have pans today, you're going to find that the handles, you have to be very alert. One time I went and bought some pans, and I looked at them, and they were wonderful, but I went, oh, my goodness, I can't put any of these in the oven, because they don't have heat-resistant handles. Some pans are made with handles that can only go up to a certain level of temperature, so that's something you need to do. And you can double this recipe. You can double this recipe. I've done it when I've had guests, and it's beautiful when you take it out of the oven and serve it. You want to make sure everybody's sitting at the table, so when it comes out, it just really is just beautiful to see. This is how you need. Now, you could use a glass casserole. Maybe if you were really not able to find anything in your cupboard in the way of a metal pan, maybe a 9-inch pie pan, but I didn't care for a 9-inch pie pan. I would use I'd use a skillet, if you can. It's far better, and it really is very nice for serving. Okay, you're going to need three eggs, a half a cup of skim milk, a pinch of salt, and 1/2 cup of instant blending flour. Yeah, 1/2 cup. That's it. I'm not kidding. I put this stuff in a blender, push the button, and in 30 seconds it's all blended. Your oven does have to be preheated, though, to 450 degrees. That's very important. It has to be really, really hot. So use your nonstick cooking spray. Spray your pan with that. Put your liquid in there. Now, if you want to do it by hand, you'd use a wire whisk to beat your eggs really, really well. Then you beat in your milk and salt. And then, of course, you beat in your flour. So if you want to do that, fine. I'm lazy. I stick all the ingredients in a blender, push that button, and it's done. You pour it into your pan, bake it in your oven for 25 minutes. It's going to just puff up and be absolutely gorgeous. And if you want to have something to serve with it, you can dust it with confectionery sugar and serve it with slices of fresh lemon, or you can have maple syrup, or you can do whatever you want. It is really good. And, you know, you've got, if you cut it into 6 servings, if you want, you're going to find it's only 90 calories a serving. That's all. So if you're really wanting something that can satisfy your sweet tooth, but it's going to be low in calories, and if you're concerned about fat consumption, this doesn't have any fat in it, and it is pretty as it can be when it comes out. I've been fixing that for so many years, and it is so easy and so good. So that's a quick one. And again, if you want to give me a buzz, 888-815-9756, and I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. And then I've got something for a Mexican lasagna, but maybe I'll share that with you later, because I have got this story about phantom bullets. But before I go into that, I want to remind those of you that have had very unique experiences of the paranormal, whether it's seeing a ghost, having a visitation from someone where they come back and give you a message of some kind, or maybe you've had dreams that have come true. I mean, whatever it is, I'd love to have you send me your story. I'm putting together a book that will have 100 stories in it, and I'd like to have yours in it. So send it to me, Donna@DelphiInternational.com, and just put in the subject line, Story for Donna's Book, and then I'm going to put it in my file, and as soon as I have 100 stories, then I'm going to be sending it off to a publisher. But I'm in the process of collecting right now, so I would love to have you do that. Again, any story that, any particularly unique paranormal experience, I'd love to have you send it along. Okay, speaking of paranormal experiences, this is about phantom bullets. Now, this was documented in 1916. There's a lot of things that go on. Unfortunately, people have an interest enough, and they try to document it, and this is a good thing to do. This happened on February the 2nd. There was a couple, Mr. and Mrs. Charles Rep, who said, in fact, they talked to a reporter at the New York Herald, said that their Glassboro, New Jersey home had been attacked by phantom bullets. They didn't see anybody around their house. They could hear glass breaking within the rooms, and bullet holes were found in the window panes. But you know what? They couldn't find anything inside their home that showed any trace of anybody being shot at. Well, this was a very frightening experience for them, you can imagine. And there were members of the township committee that revealed after they investigated the windows were broken much as a window usually is when a bullet goes through it. Now, again, no bullets were found. Now, in the late 1920s, again in New Jersey, phantom bullets hit the headlines again. This time, it was because of what they called the Phantom Sniper of Camden. There were 5 cars, including one driven by a former state senator, Albert F. Woodruff. All of their windshields were broken by phantom bullets. In this case, no shots were heard. And then shortly after their experience, an early morning bus carrying 7 passengers across the Camden Bridge had the same thing happen to them. They didn't hear any shot, but the windows were punctured just like a bullet would puncture them. Now, the driver of that bus said he heard a sudden buzz, and then this hole would open up in the glass right in front of his eyes. He said it was like it was magic. And then little pieces of glass were falling on him when this was happening. So he slammed on the brakes, and the passengers didn't know what was wrong because there was nothing. They weren't hearing anything. There was nothing that they could hear. Now, there was only a policeman who had just greeted the bus driver and a little girl in sight. And the bridge patrolman searched the bus in roadbed for a bullet, and nothing was found. Then there was another case with phantom bullets. A candy store's plate glass door was shot at. Now, the proprietor happened to be in the kitchen of the candy store when he heard a crash and walked out and found a bullet hole in his window. Interestingly enough, it was situated directly across the street, his shop was, from the town's fire department, and nobody heard a shot. Nothing was found. Little spooky? Maybe. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. If you want, give me a call, 888-815-9756. Is the number to call if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of insight. We'll be right back.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. I found a quote by Clint Eastwood that I really like. He said, if you want a guarantee, buy a toaster. And I said, oh, boy, leave it to a Clint Eastwood to think about that. But his point is a good one. So often we think we need to have guarantees, or that we are entitled to guarantees in life. And by golly, when you think of everything that's going on in the world today, I don't know about you, but frequently I will try to watch the European newscasts on the cable television stations, and they have a different perspective on things, and that's good. I like having different views, and I think, look at what goes on in different parts of the world. You really don't have any guarantees. And frequently, we think we're entitled to having absolute safety and entitled to this and that and the other. And life is constantly proving to us that we cannot live in an ivory tower. It just doesn't work. And if you really watch Mother Nature, you'll find she's constantly changing, adapting. Look at the volcano in Iceland. I just shake my head when I hear people fussing about, well, this is canceled, that's canceled. And I want to say, excuse me? There's a volcano going off. There's no way people can be up there and flying. And I just am amazed. and how even every day we might have thunderstorms. I've been in Texas on business trips where thunderstorms come in, or Colorado, or many areas of the Midwest, and even the East Coast, and you can't put a plane up in that environment. You have to sit on the ground and wait until Mother Nature does whatever she's going to do and moves on to new territory so that you can do things safely. And it is amazing to me how we really take so much for granted, and we need to understand that life is there for us to live and experience, and there are no guarantees. And I will differ with Clint Eastwood, because I've known even toasters that didn't give you a very good one, but I got his point, so I wanted to share that with you. I have a couple of fun things that I wanted to just bring with you today. I always enjoy these very whimsical surveys that people will take. Well, take a look at your hands. Do you know that, of course you know, that there are those people called palmists that usually can read things about you from your hands, the shape of your fingers, etc. And I know that there are those individuals that really are quite good at it. But this is some research that was done, and it's a hand analyst, Vernon Mahabal of handresearch.com. And he said, you've got a secret code with your hands. So I thought I'd share some of this with you. So take a look at your hands. You know, if your ring finger, take a look at your hand, put your hands out in front of you and look at your ring finger. Now, if it's longer than your index finger, guess what that means? If your ring finger is longer than your index finger, you are very confident and outgoing. You show just about every sign of leadership you possibly can. And there's another reason why others like to follow you. You tend to be musical, and you really have a lot of testosterone in your system. Mm-hmm. Well, and you have a knack for spatial relations, and by golly, those people who have extremely long ring fingers are most happy when they are creative. So that gives you something to talk about at a party, but I'm not finished. What if, when you have your hands out in front of you, you have your thumb stretched out and it forms a 90-degree angle to the rest of your hand? All right? So your thumb forms a 90-degree angle to your hand. Well, that means you are the picture of confidence. You also are really uninhibited. And because your thumb is so relaxed, allowing for that 90-degree expansion, not only do you have a lot of poise and self-possession, but you are a go-getter. You believe in going for your dreams. Now, if your thumb forms a 45-degree angle to your hand, a 45-degree angle to your hand. Now, this is what you have to do to determine this. You have to relax your dominant hand, your right hand or your left hand, and place it flat on a table. Now, if your thumb makes a V, you have tremendous willpower. In other words, if you can only stretch it to a certain point and it's a V, then that means a lot of willpower. And you are a person that if you make up your mind to do something, you are going to get it done. You work with details easily. And the observation that they've made in hand research, that the smaller your hand is, the better a person is with fine work. Well, that's not unusual. Women have typically been known to be able to do beautiful handwork much more easily than men. And often they have very small hands. It's not unusual. Now, what if your index finger is longer? Your index finger is longer than your ring finger. You're verbal. Quick-witted, you really are good at games, and you may not think it's significant, but a longer index finger indicates higher amounts of estrogen, a hormone that enhances the brain's language center. And you are a very brave individual. You don't mind challenges. You'll step up and you'll meet them face-to-face. Now, your middle finger that you have is representing balance and emotional stability. A long middle finger is thought to indicate practicality and conscientiousness, while the one that's closer in length to the ring finger shows a more free-spirited personality. And don't forget that little finger, the pinky. You know, that's known as the messenger finger. Your pinky holds clues to your communication skills if it ends at the middle of your ring finger. You express yourself best in writing. If it extends beyond that, you're a wonderful speaker. Did you learn something about yourself? I hope you did. This is Donna Sebo. Tomorrow we're going to be talking about development of psychic ability. I hope that you can join me. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. And tomorrow also I'll remind you about the upcoming show that I have on this Sunday with a wonderful, wonderful pair of people, Susan and Bert. I'll give you that detail tomorrow so that you can tune in on Sunday if you would so desire. That'll be at 11 o'clock in the morning on latalkradio.com. Anyway, this is Donna Sebo. Remember always again, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Life is a living experience. Stand tall and live it. Don't be afraid of changes and challenges, because this is what you're here to grow through. And who knows? You may be the next person that comes up with the concept or idea that'll make this world a better place in your own special way. This is Donna. We'll be talking to you tomorrow, same time, same place. Have a fabulous day, wonderful evening wherever you are. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.